Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Energy Unplugged with Stuart Wiedei, where we talk about all things energy, try to dispel many of the myths that are being propagated in the public, and talk about the things that we can do as a country and around the world to have a cleaner environment, but still provide a standard of living for citizens in our country and all walks of life. We're really excited. I've got my co-host Mark Denton with me today. How are you, Mark?
Good morning. Doing great.
The sage of South Georgia. Well, we're really excited today to have Bill Van Hoy, who is the executive director of the Texas Propane Gas Association, who I've known for many years and have great respect for. He's a very knowledgeable person, but in the last several months has been in the middle of a firestorm out in Texas. How are you today, Bill?
I'm doing good. It's you'd think I was sitting in Southern California. It's 75 degrees and blue skies outside. And that's a welcome from what we had to deal with several months ago during our winter storm episode.
That's right. Well, we always like to start and let our guests introduce themselves and a little bit of a background. And I would love to hear the story. I've heard it before, Bill, of how you got started in the propane business and then how you made your way to the Texas Propane Gas Association leadership role.
Sure. Well, and the story may change because, you know, I don't have a beer in my hand yet, and you and I aren't sitting at a bar. So I'll do my best to recollect exactly how I told it the time before. I'm Bill Van Hoy with the Texas Propane Gas Association. I've been here since 2003. I worked in the propane industry for 3 years. Prior to that, I was in the United States Marine Corps as a major stationed in Southern California. When we left, I went to work for a major propane company there in California. It was actually in Northern California. Went through the process of speaking with the individuals that would be my manager and doing the interview process. And quite frankly, well, literally, I met the gentleman at the airport in San Francisco, was handed the keys, shown on a map where the facility was, and he said, best of luck. And this was not a small district. This was millions of gallons and quite a few employees and whatnot. So I love that kind of challenge. I was a little miffed at the process, maybe, but actually it allowed me to go in and start from scratch and do what I needed to do to get things going. It had been a recent acquisition for that company. And so they were, you know, like any acquisition, they were still in that process of turnover and processes and who does what. So it was a great challenge. I spent an inordinate amount of time up there. My family, of course, missed me a bit during those first few months, but we got it squared away and stayed there 3 years. I'll tell you how I got to the Propane Gas Association. I had a brother-in-law called me up. He's here in Texas. At the time, he was married to an individual whose father was in the propane business here in Texas. And he says, hey, they're looking for an executive director of the association here to represent all the member companies in Texas. And look, all they do is golf and take people to dinner.
Boy, that's a real sales job, isn't it?
Yeah. So I interviewed for the position. And fortunately, they didn't have me go golf while I as one of the prerequisites, because I've probably only golfed about 6 times in the 18 years I've been here, and it's not impressive any of those times. So that's my background story, as it would be.
Well, that's great. You've been in Texas for quite one of the early migrants from California, is arguably.
Yeah, it's they're still coming. There's a lot of growth going on here in Texas, all over, actually, not just specifically where I live here in Austin, but frankly, all the major metropolitan and even the mid-metropolitan areas see unprecedented growth, which is great for our industry.
Right.
We definitely are reaping the benefits of this growth.
Well, in February, one of the things we really are excited to have you joining us to discuss is the fact that Texas, as we all know, and everybody who's not been under a rock, knows Texas was hit with an historic winter storm. And maybe if you would like to give us an overview, there's been a lot of publicity associated with it. But can you just give us an overview from your perspective about what happened to the electrical grid in the state And then also maybe what propane did during that period, because it's overlooked, I think, in terms of its role in a grid outage such as you all experienced.
Sure. So with any winter storm, I would say this one officially lasted, I'd say, 5 days. And probably in any state north of Texas, I would say, they would have handled that as just a normal occurrence every winter. But we were not prepared for this, clearly. We weren't prepared for it as individuals and families, but in our electrical grid, was not prepared for the energy load required and the infrastructure issues that came about and became very apparent. We knew it was coming, knew that it was going to be several inches of snow, but what was the toughest part is the sustained below freezing down to sub-zero for several days, 3 days, I believe it was, and the electrical grid system started failing. And legislative session is going on right now, and that's a huge topic of discussion and what we can do to improve things. A lot of finger pointing going on. We have electric co-ops here in the state of Texas. Quite a few of those are in trouble now financially due to this situation. What happens is we have an organization, ERCOT, who manages our grid. The grid in the state of Texas is external to all other grids in the United States, albeit there are a couple of little sections that still use the national grid. But
and Bill, it's the only state in the whole country that has its so-called only grid intrastate grid system. Is that correct?
That's a big surprise to you, isn't it?
Yeah. Everything's bigger and better in Texas.
Yeah.
And independent.
Most times, but and in this case, what happens is the co-ops and all the electrical folks have to buy electricity from the producers, and the rates are associated with demand. And as the demand goes up, it goes up exponentially, and the price can go to exorbitant levels. There are hurdles for that to occur, but at this particular situation, they went to the maximum and they sustained the maximum price per megawatt hour. What happens is these folks that are out there, the retail side, the electric co-ops being one of those, they get hit with a bill for hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's a huge problem, because who's going to pay that bill? They don't have that kind of capital in the bank. So this is the discussion at the legislature right now. Who's going to pay it? Are they going to pass that on to their current customer base, or is the state of Texas or the federal government going to just waive this or not have them pay it back? It's anybody's guess. You would be surprised as to who has an opinion on this and what direction this may go. I'd hate to think that current customers are going to have to pay a bill. They knew how this business model works, and they chose to utilize this business model. There are a lot of actual individual people that bought electricity as residential customers where you can do that at these similar rates. So they got hit with bills of a few thousand dollars, which is a terrible situation too. So
right.
I don't know where it's going to go.
Well, you know, a lot of people, particularly folks who are out there just working, doing their thing, providing for their families, enjoying the relationships with their families and friends, they say often that I just don't care for politics, don't want to deal with it. But politics affects everyone's life in one form or another. And I think this is a case where the policymakers in the state of Texas envisioned a system. And as I understand it, there was nearly $80 billion spent on wind power. Is that about accurate, Bill?
Yeah, that's my understanding. We actually produce quite a bit of wind energy here in the state. I don't know what the percentage was of utilization during the storm. I think it would probably be near zero, because I don't believe that you can run those wind turbines during an event like this. So you've got, let's just say, 5 days to sustain zero production from the wind energy and the solar, for that matter. They have no storage capacity for either of those, so you are 100% reliant, as far as I know, and unfortunately, I guess, on the natural gas hydrocarbon to keep us all warm?
Well, there are systems that you can keep the wind turbines turning when there's still wind blowing, but they weren't utilized in Texas. I think the last time there was a really big weather or winter weather event was 2011, so it had nearly a decade. But those precautions, and I think there were still some issues with the natural gas system running, so then the grid got overloaded and had to be shut down. So when all that occurred, Bill, what were your propane companies in the state doing to try to keep people comfortable and warm and not freezing to death?
Sure. As I said, we do not handle winter weather, cold weather, but well at all as a state. But I would tell you that we do handle big weather-related disasters. We're pretty used to them. We always can anticipate a hurricane or two, some bigger than others. We have our fair share of tornadoes and things of that nature. So somewhat prepared. I will tell you, the propane marketers overall did a fantastic job in what seemed to be an impossible situation. Everyone I talked to ahead of this, knowing this was coming, you know, their charge was, hey, Van Hoy, let's just make sure we have some hours of service early on so that we can get our customers taken care of, you know, fill the critical tanks and then go back and top everybody off as best you can. So that was my charge initially, is to do exactly that. Talk to the right leadership. Didn't get a favorable response from the national telling me that the federal motor carrier guys weren't interested in doing a regional waiver at that time. So I went to my state folks at the governor's office and got an approval. It did kill a couple days of hours of service that I would have liked to have had, but it is what it is. So once they are allowed to do that, they schedule appropriately and safely, and just did a bang up job. That, you know, that nobody ever forces anybody to get on the road, but drivers that were comfortable would get on the road during this event, or if it was a situation where it just absolutely had to be, say, for instance, you had a large nursing home facility. Matter of fact, there's legislation this year that I believe will pass that will mandate in the state of Texas that skilled nursing facilities will have some type of hydrocarbon, not battery, backup generation. Albeit if their natural gas is available, that would be an option, or propane, so that they don't have to go through some of the situations that we saw.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned hurricanes, and it could be a winter event such as you experienced in Texas or wildfires in California. And propane always seems to come to the rescue, although it's not known. And I know our company, which has many coastal states that we serve, when the natural gas system is shut down because of hurricane rolling in and there's no electricity available, it's propane that's running the generator systems with the Salvation Army and the Red Cross and the FEMA. When the federal government emergency responders come in, propane is running all the equipment to provide food and shelter and hot water for people as needed. And that's something that was experienced in Florida with the hurricane season. They mandated that all of these facilities, these primary care, the health care, and the retirement homes had to have generator systems running on propane so that people would be not in a very challenged situation as they might otherwise have been. So you're experiencing the same thing in Texas right now, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And I sat in lines exactly with everybody else filling 20-pound cylinders, trying to deliver them to people that had called me personally, friends of mine or what have you. I was just amazed at how many people were in the lines with these 20-pound cylinders, utilizing them, I'm assuming, for either heating or cooking food. You know, you talk about, do we come to the rescue? We do, silently. I mean, if there was ever an opportunity for marketing, we are that unsung hero. You know, it's like, love you when you're around, but then easily forgotten, you know, when you're not needed or you're using the product. It's just, it's something that, interestingly enough, you know, when you're barbecuing, you don't think about, dang, I love the fact that I got propane, you know, you're just cooking. But if you didn't have it, you wouldn't be barbecuing. So,
right.
So does Bill, does this Does this shed maybe some light on the fallacies of like the Green New Deal, that we have all these aspirations of wind and solar for power generation in this company that's only 3% of the power generation? Hopefully Texas brings some reality to that conversation.
Right, right. I had breakfast with my 25-year-old daughter and asked her these exact questions. Funny enough, she would like to see a lot of renewable or wind energy type situations, and I think we all were. I think so much of this is just the facts aren't out there. You know, the amount of production, what it would take to solarize the country or wind turbine the country, would give people pause if they understood. And ignorance is not a bad thing. It's just is what it is. They just don't realize the enormity of what they're talking about.
That's right. And you say the enormity, which is appropriate, but the complexity of it to deliver energy that everybody expects in our the world today and in our country and in our homes and our businesses to keep them running and operating. Of course, people are attached to their devices, their cell phones, their laptops. And people used to worry just about having the food in your refrigerator spoil when you didn't have electricity. Now everybody is concerned about, can I get my cell phone to talk to people?
Right. I was one of those people. When I lost, I was one of the early adopters to have lost their electricity, I think. I was on like day one. And it really does become apparent the needs of what you are so accustomed to when you don't have it. It becomes very apparent very, very quickly.
And something as fundamental as just communicating with people. In your case, you're having to coordinate with state officials, with your members in the state, the propane companies that are providing all these services.
Right.
And coordinates many, many activities. If your cell phone's not charged, you're out of luck.
Right. You know, we decided to go to a cloud-based communication systems, which that's a silly way to say we're able to communicate my staff amongst ourselves without having to go to the office. We can pull, transfer phone calls very seamlessly. We can pick up phone calls. It rings on all our cell phones, which really enabled us to do things that we would not have been able to do because we could not get into the office. And I would say we didn't skip a beat. I knew there were going to be calls coming in. We've gone through this before. I prepared my staff and just reminded them to be very aware that there's going to be phone calls throughout the days that people are going to need things. And fortunately, they did call. I like the fact that they do. Our supplier members would call on things such as they were trying to get into a plant and the plant, they couldn't get in. It's too slick. So one way or another, we found a way to get a hold of the right people to get some salt and sand out there to get the roads taken care of, which was, that's our charge. That's what we try to do. Retail marketers would call, ask questions about the hours of service or all kinds of things. Customers would call and we'd try to reassure them that they would be taken care of one way or another. So it was like we were at our office, which was great.
Well, Bill, tell us about the importance of Texas. Everybody knows the oil and gas production and how prominent it is in Texas and what it provides to the entire country. But tell us a little bit as it relates to propane about the largest and the primary hub for propane in the United States down in Mount Bellevue. Tell us about the role Mount Bellevue, Texas plays in our country's energy picture.
Sure. I believe it is still the largest underground storage facility in the United States, maybe even in the world. And it is the central hub for storage. It is the Permian Basin, where most of the oil and gas production occurs, is quite a ways away. So we have quite a pipeline system in the state of Texas to get those natural gas liquids over to Mount Bellevue, Texas. And then from there, all the eastern shore relies on pipelines that head up from Mount Bellevue. But quite a few of our marketers here in the state of Texas truck or rail out of Mount Bellevue. To my knowledge, they never did shut down. Those guys were running pretty hard all the different terminals there throughout this entire winter storm.
Right. And people don't know, there are over 75,000 miles of propane pipelines around the country, mostly starting or originating in Mount Bellevue, Texas, outside of Houston, and going all over up through the Midwest, the Northeast, the Southeast, the Mid-Atlantic, and a lot of rail product going out west as well. So it's critically important, but there's a vast, expansive network of propane moving around. And one of the things I think we all hear about these goals, these aspirational goals to have zero carbon economies or companies becoming zero carbon, that's going to take decades if you're going to do it with wind and solar, not to mention that a lot of fossil fuels are used to produce wind turbines. And you got to dig solar materials out of the ground, which requires equipment that's running on fossil fuels. But there's an important role for fossil fuels going forward. And propane is one of the cleanest energy sources known to man. Its emissions profile. And you can actually, if we want to make a 30% or a 50% reduction by 2035, you can do that right now today with an electric tankless water heater versus a propane tankless water heater. The propane tankless water heater has half the greenhouse gas emissions and CO2 emissions that an electric one does because of the current structure of our grid system. So again, Texas is a very important state, not just in relation to the retailers that you have that are serving their customers, but to improving and making environmental gains in terms of reductions in emissions, whether it's CO2 or sulfides or black carbon, which I think is an important one. So the real issue is that people need to understand you don't flip a switch and have zero carbon all over. It's not realistic to happen. And you mentioned a little while ago that ignorance is maybe acceptable. Well, we should become more informed. It's really not acceptable if you're promoting ideas that aren't realistic. It defies the laws of physics.
Right. That's exactly, you know, again, I was talking to my daughter this morning, Katie. I said, what do you think about the zero net energy and getting down to, you know, we had a whole long discussion. She's like, Dad, and she's marketing. She's it's just nothing. It's a buzzword that people really don't even know what it means. And I venture to say the majority of people that talk about it or think they know about it probably don't have all their facts. You know, they are adamant about the getting down to zero carbon. Microsoft came out and was talking about doing that. I don't even see logically that it even makes sense whatsoever. It doesn't even seem like it makes sense to say things like this because it's carbon exists in our environment. Everything is made out of carbon. So it's like you can say it. It's catchy. We do need to improve our environment. And there are factual ways to do that, including the use of propane. It's just getting that word out is so difficult, but it's a necessary thing we have to do. It's a tough thing to hear when you hear people talk about the negatives of hydrocarbon or anti-fracking people. I was thinking of imagining walking down a beach somewhere and a bunch of people come up and start talking about anti-petroleum products, and they're standing there with everything on their body is made from those products, from everything, the sunglasses, the fancy polyester shirt, the surfboard has got fiberglass and styrofoam. Everything about their existence deals with hydrocarbons. So I'm not sure if we're ever going to get people to understand this. And the reduction in emissions, definitely. But look at what we have. We can reduce those emissions if we use the proper tools. And propane is right in the mixture of that. Somebody said we need to make ourselves more modern. You look back at these old advertisements I used to see in these propane magazines that I have at our offices, and they said the modern, you know, it's the modern energy or whatever. Somehow you just need to find a way to remind people of its benefits as best you can. Keep it in the conversation. It's a difficult thing to do. Fortunately, don't live in California anymore. I can only imagine the nightmare of having to explain to people how we can fit into this. Because right. It seems like they are just adamant about going all electric.
You say we're going to live in an environment where everything is wind and solar. First of all, we would have to cover nearly 40% of the landmass of the country with one or the other. I'm not sure that type of visual pollution or even the visual effects of that is something that society or our country wants to accept or the people in our country. But even a wind turbine, as an example, and we've talked about this previously in one of our podcasts, you know, one wind turbine requires 900 tons of steel, which needs fossil fuels to produce, 2,500 tons of concrete, which require fossil fuels, and 45 tons of non-recyclable plastic. So there's nothing that is zero emissions, and perhaps your daughter, who I've met, is extremely bright, knows that, you know, it is a marketing term, but we have to make policy based on facts and reality and ensure that the standard of living of our citizens is taken care of, but also that we don't make a product so expensive that particularly lower and middle income families don't get crushed by the additional cost associated right. with the electrification of everything.
You said we had to make a policy legislation with factual information. And I think that's a problem because it's not, oftentimes you see legislation passed based on a perception maybe or an intent not necessarily factually correct. I mean, I see it all the time. So it's that's the tough thing is to get your legislative folks to fully understand what they're being told and cut through what is facts and what is opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's like solar and wind are addictive drugs for policymakers.
Right.
And they're just hooked on renewables without understanding the implications of what they're saying. And it's very popular. So everyone, particularly politicians, want to be popular. But on the other hand, you have debacles like what happened in Texas if you don't have the resiliency and the reliability built into the system as well.
Right, right. Exactly.
So, Bill, what is being discussed in terms of the electric rates in Texas, not just these billions of dollars of related to the hangover from the grid system? And as you said, when the demand goes up, the pricing goes up. So you have these tens of billions of dollars that are going to have to be spread or paid for by someone. But are there any discussions about electric rates in California and what might happen with them?
I haven't seen anything that specifically talks about rates necessarily going up. I mean, there's been a lot of committee hearings where people discuss that. Certainly, if things get passed on, our rates are somewhat reasonable because of the fact that much of our electricity is created by natural gas. We have some coal, lignite coal even, but the majority of it is natural gas. It keeps the pricing down because there's not much to transportation costs. And then, of course, we have the wind power. I was just asked if I wanted to. I had to re-up my electric contract for a home I have in Houston. And the guy gave me the price. I think it was like 10 cents a kilowatt hour. He says, but if you want to go with the renewable, it's 16 cents. So, you know, that doesn't sound like much, but if you do it as a percentage, that's a pretty hefty increase.
Well, you know, for example, let's just take that 16 cents per kilowatt. And there's a great rule I always like to talk about, the 27 time rule, and that gives you the equivalent of a propane price. That's over $4.30 per gallon on the equivalency basis.
Yeah.
And so it's probably double what your propane companies are charging their consumers in the state.
Yep.
So there's a real cost associated with going with these type of plans.
Yeah. You know, before I forget, I want to tell you, the one thing I never like to know that customers are going to run out of propane. It's inevitable when there's a terrible situation where you cannot get your trucks there. And I expect calls usually from the media or legislators or lobbyists or attorneys that are either just want to chew on me or want to tell me how things are going to be or whatever. But this time around, I was surprised. I got calls from individuals and or a couple legislators I know that We have quite a few community systems, and that, what that means is that there is a central tank, normally a 30,000 gallon tank or a couple of them, and the communities can range from, say, 200 people up to 3,000 people. And I always envision the one that has 3,000 people in it, most likely there's going to be a few attorneys in there, and there's going to be a few lobbyists and legislators. So, and they're not scared to sue you or chew on you. So I thought, you know, those are the ones I fret the most. But I swear, I got calls and they were thanking me. And they said, look, we cleared the roads for you guys. We know it was dangerous, but you came out here. We were on zero, but we did not run out. And it was just awesome. It was good to see that you guys made the effort. I mean, I did not receive a negative call. That's not to say there weren't people that were plenty PO'd if they ran out of gas, but wow, what it is nice when you realize that people appreciate having the propane because the electricity never did come back on. These are people that didn't necessarily have generators. They just wanted heat for their home. They wanted to be able to have the fireplace going or cook food.
And right.
For those few days that they didn't have the electricity, as long as they had the propane, they were good to go. They were fine. They know it was an anomaly, but it was a good feeling knowing that there were some positive comments out there.
Well, that's great to hear because we always talk about that we're underappreciated in the propane, but with our energy source.
Yeah.
And when, as you said, people that didn't have electricity and they could run their fireplace and they could cook still,
yeah,
they were inconvenienced, but not to the point where there was some physical harm that could possibly happen to them. So it really tells the story of what we're capable of doing and how we support other energy sources, regardless of what they are, with propane.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, Bill, tell me a little bit where you think that Texas is going, both economically and in terms of energy usage. The state is growing. There's a lot of migration into the state because I think the enterprising nature of the citizenry there and the businesses, but also the tax regime and the quality of life is great. What do you see the future trends looking like in Texas?
Sure. So, and I'll relate it to propane because it's all I know. I mean, for the most part, I see full-on growth. There are just few places that I know of that don't have growth in the residential and the commercial markets. I see it. The residential markets are good. I'm down in along the coastline, you know, where there's not a lot of growth as far as major companies moving in. I say that, then I turn around and I see Elon Musk putting in a facility down there. So there's thousands of houses being built there. We don't get all those houses. There are around the Central Texas area, growth is abundant. People are moving further out. Interestingly enough, it just doesn't seem like there's a shortage of demand currently here in Texas. We're fortunate. I mean, there's pockets, you know, there's that I'm sure are slow, but anywhere within 100 or 200 miles of a major metropolitan area, the growth seems to be the direction that things are going right now. Commercial.
And that's where propane is, right? I mean, propane exists beyond the natural gas lines or, as you mentioned earlier, the health facilities that need backup power. It's going to be there with natural gas systems and electricity, but that is the business. You can still have gas anywhere. That's one of the great things about our energy source.
Yes. You know, I try to get out as much as I can, and I'll go to a manufacturing plant, and sure enough, they got a big 30,000 gallon tank back there, and there's some process for ceramics or something that they needed this for. So the growth in the commercial market is just dependent upon the growth of the overall area, because there seems to always be something that utilizes propane, and not to mention the forklift gas sales that we have in some of the larger areas along, say, the Texas-Mexico border, like City of Laredo. Incredible amount of facilities there running on forklift.
Well, you know, and that people, there's a rather big misunderstanding there. The moving goods around the country and around the state and around communities, even the last mile, these distribution centers, the manufacturing facilities, well over half of all the forklifts in these type of facilities are running on propane because it can be run indoors safely because it's clean and so environmentally friendly. So very, very important role. But Bill, we really appreciate you taking some time to share some of the stories about how propane helped many households and those fortunate enough to have it in their homes through that February crisis that existed. And we really appreciate you taking time to visit with us today.
Well, sure. Come on down anytime you want. I enjoyed being with you all today and look forward to another opportunity.
Good news. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Energy Unplugged. Mark Denton, nice to have you on board today.
And thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Bill Van Hoy, from the Executive Director of the Texas Propane Gas Association, was our guest today. And again, thank you, Bill. And we look forward to hearing and talking to you next time.